morning to everybody. And take a look around you. I think we have some that are not here. Some are accounted for and others may not be. So take a look around you and see who's not here and maybe give them a call or encourage them. But glad to see everyone is here. We have visitors. We're certainly grateful for your being here. We want to invite you to come back at every opportunity that you have. And please find a visitor's card in front of you. And if you don't mind, fill that out for us. We would appreciate it. Encourage you to be back at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Wes will be affirming, as Edward said, that the hair is the covering. The long hair is the covering. Let me get that correct. And I'll be in the negative to that. So you should find that an interesting discussion. Without any further delay, let's get back to what we were looking at with regard to our theme. And last Sunday, I said that the three lessons this month to round out building an ark at home were going to be very interrelated. That I was going to look at the whole idea of parents and children. And last Sunday, I focused on mothers and really what children should be able to see with in the person of their mother in the home. Today, I'm going to focus on the fathers. And next Sunday, I'm going to kind of bring all of that together and talk about bringing up children and looking at, you know, maybe some of the things the Bible has to say or reminding ourselves of those things, and we'll tie all of that together. But this morning, we want to take a look especially at the idea of godly fathers, and of course, godly fathers, as I've been saying, in an old-fashioned home. The reason I say old-fashioned is because that is the way it is viewed sometimes. If we look at the biblical model, that's outdated, old-fashioned, you know, these are different times, it's 2018 or whatever it might be. But we want to look at the biblical model, the old-fashioned home as it's described in the Bible from Genesis through the end of the Bible. And I want to talk in particular this morning about a father and what a father is to be in the home. I want to start with the question, though. A sociological question of how important are fathers, and notice how I said it, in the home. How important is it to have a father in the home? How important is that to the child's well-being? And I don't want to dwell a long time, but let me spend about the next 4 or 5 minutes just running through some summaries of various studies, and I took these from different places, so just kind of put a number of points that were found in different studies, etc. So how important are fathers in the home? There was a comment made to me, it's been over 20 years ago now. I went to visit a man who had made a decision to leave his home and family. He was leaving his wife for someone else. He had 3 children at the time. And I had known him for a long time. And so I was trying to talk to him naturally about reconsidering that decision. He had already had the affair. The wife wanted to forgive him and to reconcile the marriage. And in a heated discussion that there ended up being, he said to me, having grown up in a broken home, he said to me, and he said it rather loudly and forcefully, "I did fine, they will too," in reference to his children. As I said, I've known him for a long time. I knew for a fact he had not done all that quote-unquote fine. That there were psychological scars, etc., from having grown up in the situation in which he grew up. He did not do fine, he did not do well, and I knew that his 3 children, young at the time, were going to be in the same condition. They were not going to do well either. I've lived long enough to see the end result of that, and they have not done well. They did not do fine. So I did fine, they will too. But the question is, how important is a father in the home? And is this the attitude, in other words, "I made it all right, they will make it all right too," is that the attitude that perpetuates the lack of, or the feeling that it is not necessary to have a father in the home? I wonder if children who are in fact products of such an environment look at themselves and consider themselves to be just fine, having grown up in a less than ideal situation, And so it is not important to them to go on and try to provide that environment with a live-in father, their father, the father living in the home. And is that what perpetuates this ongoing lack of fathers in the homes in our society? Because the number of children living in fatherless homes has risen by some 400% in my lifetime since the 1960s. Now, I mean by that, if you were to look at the number of millions of homes without fathers in the early 1960s, you could fast forward my lifetime, fast forward 50 years, and it would have quintupled. There would be five times the number of millions of homes without fathers in our society. So what perpetuated this? Is it this feeling that the fathers are really not important? And I leave that to you as a question. Because older people, like myself and older, can well remember a much different cultural portrayal that existed before the mid-1960s. That if you were to look at popular entertainment, for example, television programs like, and with the title, Father Knows Best, and I happened to notice the rerun of Father Knows Best, I think it was Friday, and the crisis in the family was the oldest daughter was dating a man who was in the Army and all of the things that go with that, and the father was very involved with that whole situation. Father Knows Best. One of the things that stands out to me, I love the movie and the book. I read the book first and then saw the movie, To Kill a Mockingbird. And if you watch that movie, and I won't go all into that, but there is a dramatic scene in the courtroom in which there is a group of friends of the defendant, and the father in this movie is the attorney, the defense attorney. And he is defending this defendant, and it's very unpopular, etc., at the time. And when he finishes an extremely difficult situation in the courtroom clears, and he's gathering his materials, and he's about the last one to leave the courtroom. And as he walks under the balcony, again, filled with friends of the defendant and the two children of the father, an old man says to the children, "Children, stand up. Your father's passing." And it was the respect, and you felt it, and, it's very dramatic. This is your father, and your father is a good man, and your father has done what a father should do and what a man should do. Stand up. Show him respect. And they do stand up, and the father, I think even unknowingly, passes under the balcony, but that's not the point. The point is the respect given to the father. Now, I could spend time, and I thought about spending time on comparing fathers of that time with the Al Bundys of 20 years ago, and some of you know, and the ridiculous portrayals that exist today. What happened in our society? What happened to relegate fathers to bumbling fools and unimportant roles in the home? And that's for all of us to ask ourselves. Patrick Moynihan, who was a well-known, and I think from this area, if I remember right, but a well-known politician, made this comment in 1965. He said, and I quote, "From the wild Irish slums of the 19th century Eastern Seaboard to the riot-torn suburbs of Los Angeles, there is one unmistakable lesson in American history, and it is this. A community that allows a large number of young men to grow up in broken families, dominated then by women, never acquiring any stable relationship to male authority, that community asks for and gets chaos." Now, again, it's left to you to ask yourself, is that the case? With this five times the millions of homes without fathers, have we asked for and have we gotten chaos in our society? And I say, turn on the television any given day, 7 days a week, and answer that question. Now, having said that, let's talk about building an ark at home. Let's go back to the biblical model. And let's ask ourselves, ourselves, what does God say about fathers? I think studies consistently show that fathers indeed play an important role. Let me run through some of these things that these studies find. And you've probably seen this kind of thing before, but fathers play an important role in the intellectual or cognitive development of their children. A study of 17,000 children, for example, published in Adolescence, found that children living apart from their father were more likely to repeat a grade in school and 70% more likely to be expelled from school. Children with involved fathers tended to attain higher levels of education, and they are more likely to get better grades, enjoy education, and participate in constructive, and we could talk about destructive extracurricular activities, but constructive curricular extracurricular activities. That doesn't mean there aren't exceptions to this. There are. But this is what the study found. Again, this one was of 17,000 children. They play an important role in the development of a child's moral behavior. For example, there is a higher rate, undeniable, a higher rate of tobacco use, alcohol, and drug use among teenagers without involved fathers. And teenagers without involved fathers are far more likely to commit suicide. I read one study that put it as high as 5-1. That may or may not be exact, but you get the point. A study published in the Journal of Research on Crime and Delinquency found the best predictor of burglary and violent crime in a community was the proportion of households without fathers. And finally, in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, they found that 70% of all juveniles in long-term correctional facilities did not live with their father while growing up. How important are fathers in the home? They are also important in the development of the child's identity. And while this one may be harder to see, and these studies can be very detailed, I chose just a couple of facts, one about boys and one about girls. They're important to boys, for example, to teach boys and young men how to be men. David Bankenhorn of Fatherless America said this, "A father has no equal when it comes to socializing a male child." And I want you to hear that because modern people who advance modern theories will say, really, the greatest development of social behavior are other boys. So get them involved in things where they're interacting with other boys. But Bankenhorn says a father has no equal when it comes to socializing a male child, especially in teaching respectful attitudes toward females. And you can compare that with what boys might get from their peers and their attitudes toward females. But also to help young girls form their views of men and how to relate to men without fathers, adolescent girls are 5 times more likely to become a teenage mother. And I won't get deep into this, but if you were to go on and pursue those studies, here's what you would find. Boys and girls with good, active, on-the-job fathers, very involved, very engaged, tend to grow up and the boys want to be their father and the girls want to marry their father. And I mean, find someone like that to marry. And girls and boys growing up in a home without them tend to, it doesn't have to be the case, but they tend to totally fail as fathers, and girls tend to marry the exact opposite and sometimes go to extremes in that. Questions they're asking some of these studies, for example, why are girls attracted to guys who are involved in everything under the sun? And some of it has to do with rebellion against a father who was not on the job in the home. Now, you can look up some of those studies and go further and deeper with that. Children with engaged fathers, they show greater initiative and self-control. And they also tend to be, as grown children, adults in life, economically self-sufficient. Whereas that is not the case without on-the-job, engaged fathers. Without fathers, this one I found interesting. I was telling Montel, you know, this was an interesting study. Because seemingly some of this didn't have anything to do with the fathers. And yet if you think about it deeper, maybe it does. But you can see it. They tend to have higher rates of asthma, headaches, anxiety, depression, and behavioral problems without on-the-job, engaged fathers. So I ask you again, how important are fathers in the home? When we look at the Bible, and I want you to turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 16. One of my biggest gripes against the Al Bundy character and others like him is that the demand of society, our society anyway, no longer is that a man be a man. In fact, people find every problem with being a man. And that if you discuss being a man is equated with animalistic behavior, all kinds of wrongful tendencies, testosterone gone berserk, etc. And yet I want you to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and notice how Paul in verse 13 says this. And I'm going to make a comment about translations here. Because regardless of whatever translation you have, if you have an older translation, King James, American Standard, Revised Standard, etc. If you have an older translation, it is going to say something like, stand fast in the faith. The King James says quit. Some translations say acquit. Some translations just simply say act like a man. Or act like men. Be strong. If you look more at a modern translation, that is sort of translated away. And you may see things like be courageous or be brave, which used to be manly attributes. But I will tell you that in the original language that this is a verb that is used and is the only time it is used in the New Testament, and it literally means to act like a man or man up. And we all understand what that term means. Be a man. The greatest need for a child in the home is for a man to be a man. If they've got a father, they don't need an animal for a father. They don't need a predator for a father. They don't need a boy or a playboy for a father. They need a man. And that's exactly what Paul is saying in 1 Corinthians 16. Fathers, be men. Men, be men. Man up, act like a man. Now I give you the alternative. This one infuriated me a few weeks ago, and I put it down and saved it for this lesson. The Counseling and Mental Health Center at the University of Texas at Austin is going to now, and I presume they're already into this, they will now, quote, treat masculinity as a mental health issue. In other words, the whole view of men is if you are a man, being a man, and I'm not talking about all the things that men can be. You understand that. A real, godly, biblical, spiritual man, you've got a mental health issue. And they're going to treat it as such. And they're going to help male students now on this campus, quote, develop a healthy sense of masculinity. You go on and read that deeper, basically what they're going to help them to do is stop being men. Children need a father who is a real man. And I'm going to tell you unequivocally that I believe a real man loves his wife and he loves his children. And that the child needs to see that. As much as, and I said last Sunday, and there was a lot of discussion about this, I said a child needs to see a woman be a mother and be in subjection to the father. And I will likewise say that they equally need to see the father love his wife. And if a child sees that, if they grow up seeing that kind of love, this guy loves his wife and he loves me, that is the greatest stability that can be, the greatest help that can be given to a child. For the rest of their life. When they see a father that's devoted to the wife and children, and I mean by that he'll sacrifice his time, he'll sacrifice his pleasure, he'll sacrifice his desires. You know, he's human. You don't stop being human because you marry and have a child. I didn't. And I would assume every man in here, if they were being honest, would admit I didn't stop being human. I didn't stop being a man. But I had new responsibilities. I had new priorities. And so I will give up my time. I'll give up my pleasure. I'll give up my desires. I'll even give up my very life for my wife and for my child. And I will give that example, that excellent example of that devotion and that level of it to my children to carry on into life. And when children have that, again, they have that stability. But if you were to look in the Bible and go with me to Titus chapter 2, older men teach younger men. Well, is there any place where that's more needed than in the home? Older men who are fathers teach younger men, boys who are growing up, for example. Teach them to be sober-minded. The word means to be vigilant. It literally means to be free from intoxicants. Now, what does that mean? It means you're clear-headed and you're thinking clearly. They need to see a father who does that. A father who is dignified, as the passage says. He's honorable. He carries himself in an honorable way. He is self-controlled. It means literally that he has good sense and he exercises it. But it also means, if you look at that term there, that he's even-keeled. In other words, he's not an emotional wreck all the time. He is a person that strives at least. He strives to have that balance and to maintain it. He's not always blowing up at his children. He's not always throwing his anger and strength around. He knows at every moment, chances are great, he could beat his wife and children to a pulp. And there's little they could do about it. But he's well balanced. He's evil keeled. And his children, nor his wife, fear if they make the wrong move that that's going to happen to them because they know this guy is self-controlled. He exercises restraint. He's not less than human. And I will admit to you, and Montel and Juliet know this very well, I get angry like anybody. You know? And I can get angry at them. And there is a time when you get angry, naturally so, that you walk out of the room and you go and you collect yourself because that's not the time to blow up at them. It's the idea of, to my child, train my child from the very beginning, I will spank you. I will discipline you. But I will beat you up because I'm mad at you. Same thing with the wife. I will voice my views. And I'll exercise my leadership. But I will beat you into submission. And that's what they need to see in children. And they also need that sound, uncorrupted, without corruption, the faith in the Father. It can't be corrupted. The love that the Father has. Interestingly, the word love here for older men teaching younger men, it is the word for what you do with your love. Whereas with the older women teaching the younger women, it's what you feed. I find that interesting in that passage, but take that with a grain of salt. Faith, love, the endurance of that soundness within them. They know that their Father will provide for them. I'll talk more about this next Sunday, but the Father will do that. At all costs to himself, he'll provide for his children. He will protect his children. Again, at all costs to himself. Because he will put them before himself. I always think about this passage when I think about this aspect of being a father. Is the idea of greater love has no man than this. And the word for love there again is the action. That a man would lay down his life for his friends or those whom he loves. Is there any greater time when that should be tested or could be tested with your own family or your own children? I will die for you is what a father... You don't have to say that every day, but the child knows it. If it comes down to it, dad is going to be there for me even to the point of dying for me, and I don't question that. Their priority will always be, however, the Lord first. And if a child grows up knowing that nothing, not even me, comes before the Lord, that's not taking away from the child. That is the greatest sense of security. This guy is committed to what he says he is, and he won't waver from that. It has to do, you know, it affects all of those things like that behavioral, moral development, all that kind of thing. Believe me, it affects that. And that's what it's saying. Because you're driven by the love you have for them. To put Jesus first, to be a Christian at all costs, is to show the love you have for them. Now, one final point. I believe with fathers, and again, I very much believe in masculinity. I used to be an idiot when I was young, going around trying to prove how masculine I was. But I realized that the strongest man I'd ever seen, the strongest man I would ever see, was Jesus. And I've told you before, the thing that attracted me to the Bible more than anything else was Jesus. How strong he was. And Jesus, that's what we need to be as fathers. And you know, Jesus used the analogy, how often I would have, like a mother hen, have gathered you in under my wings. I think a child needs to know that that is what they have in their father. The father loves me. The father is like an old mother hen sometimes, you know. It's that idea of, I want to protect you under my wing, and I'll do anything to do that. If you've ever seen a hen or a duck or any bird like that, when the weather's getting bad or there's some kind of danger and you watch her, she goes into protect mode, son. And she starts brushing those chicks under her wing. We need to have that in fathers. Because if we don't, then the impending doom that's out there in the world that's going to get them if they're not prepared is going to strike. And so like that mother hen, Jesus showed us what it means to be a father. A person who will resolutely approach his duty. I mean, he just has that resolute mind. I will do my job. And again, maintaining that balance, not provoking the children to anger or disheartening them. We'll talk more about that next Sunday. Children need fathers like Jesus. And I'm going to make this final point. Who rule their house. Now, that may sound bad. Okay? That may sound like the overbearing tyrant and all of that kind of idea. It is not. Remember, Jesus rules his house. He doesn't pull any of us up by the scruff of the neck, jerk us up by the collars, tell us what we're going to do, strike us dead by lightning if we don't. But Jesus rules his house. He is definitely the head of his family. There's no question about Jesus being the head of the house. He leads. He takes the responsibility. He does the job. And it's not an easy job. And I think all fathers would say to anyone, you know, it may seem on the surface that being the guy who's in the lead is the easiest job. You don't have to follow. Well, I would say back to that person, you don't have to lead. And that's not an easy job. And being consistent in that leadership and maintaining that balance is a difficult thing to do. Children need that leadership, though, in the home, if they're going to develop into responsible, mature adults. And maybe that's why, I wonder, that God set up the whole system of elders in the church. And if you look at the qualifications, and you might look over quickly at 1 Timothy chapter 3, and you will notice that one of the things that Paul says first about qualifications of elders is that they know how to rule well their own house. Notice that. And go down with me to verse 4. One that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection, notice, with all gravity. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how shall he take care or rule or lead, etc., the church of God? God set up elders to be in that position to give an example. And I think that's exactly what you're finding. Because the word rule there in 1 Timothy, if you're looking at it, is an interesting compound word. Give me a moment to go through it in closing here. It's a word that means to stand before somebody or some people. It is a word that means to preside or maintain or to govern even or be over, yes. And is referring to a person who leads them, who is the leader, unequivocally. It's a compound word, however, and it emphasizes that he is leading a group. And giving him that responsibility in that compound word of doing all of these things that he must do in that role before a respective group. And then it adds, if you'll notice in 1 Timothy 3, with all gravity. That is, being serious about that job. having dignity in that leadership is a hefty responsibility. And I think all of us who have known godly elders or who know them right now would talk about how difficult, how serious, how great a job of being an elder is. That you must aspire to that and grow to that. And then when you serve, that it is a job like no other. I remind you that President Garfield, who was a member of the church in the late 1800s, he was an elder in the church. And when he took his oath of office, he made a very interesting statement before basically all of America. And Garfield said, "I'm now resigning and stepping down from the role of being an elder to be the President of the United States." He considered that job, that position, to be more important, of greater magnitude, than even being the President of the United States. And it is that job of leadership that I believe they provide an example for fathers, literally for all Christians in one sense, but certainly for fathers to emulate. And so we see that. We're told, if we were to look at Titus and 1 Thessalonians 5 that was read for us, or Hebrews 13 and verse 7, follow that example. They rule, they lead, they have that. Follow that example. And of course, children who are taught that by godly fathers have a great advantage in life. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, you believe in God's way of doing things, whether it would be in the model of the home or certainly in the plan of salvation, you believe that God's way is the only right way there is. And so this morning you know you believe in Jesus. He is the Son of God. And you'll confess that. And you're willing to repent, which may be and will be a lifetime of commitment to change, to bring yourself in harmony with every view of Jesus. This morning you'll be baptized to be forgiven of your sins, to be right with Him, to have everything that is wrong washed from your life and cleared from your conscience. And maybe it is you've done that, you just kind of need to reboot or start over. And fortunately, we have a merciful God who says, "I'm more than willing for you to do that." Won't you please come while we stand and sing?